G'day and welcome to the Machinist Therapy Hotline. This week we have another guest joining us, but first, before we get into our podcast, we need to make sure that we have the Dream Team. Tony Clouser.
Hey everybody, how's it going?
Sheeple.
Yo yo.
And me, Jody Tuckwell. And we're here, ready to do the podcast. So, let's get on with the podcast. How are we doing, gents?
Good, man. How you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I've actually taken, we've got a public holiday on Monday, so I decided to make it a long weekend and took yesterday off and went and played golf.
How'd that go?
It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, actually. I dusted my clubs off and, yeah. But then by the time I got to the ninth hole, I was basically maggoted because I'd been drinking. So we gave up and he came back.
Well, I think they say something along the lines, any gay day on the – not gay day. Scratch that. But it could be a gay day. Any day on the golf course is way better than at the shop, I would imagine, especially if you were drunk by the end.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it pretty much was because it was sort of – it's actually my birthday tomorrow, so
how old just are went you?
Out. Well, you have, wait, hold on. You can say it was actually my birthday tomorrow. It was
Okay. Tomorrow. It was my birthday tomorrow, which I don't know how that works in English. But
did you go back in time? Just be a lot of that happening. Be like, hey, tomorrow's my birthday. Not it was. That's past tense. Your birthday was come and gone.
Yeah, true. Okay, yeah, because I'm definitely not going to edit and do the podcast tonight. So
no, exactly.
So you're on the money there, actually, Tony. That's good.
I've been cranking, man. I've been busier than a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest.
Wow. That's I don't even – words – I've lost with words.
That's hey, right
hang
along
on. We've got someone else in the room as well with us today.
Let's talk to him. Who is it?
I think it's Dennis LaCouf.
Hey, guys.
Welcome,
how's it going?
Dennis. Welcome.
So for those of you that have no idea who Dennis is, well, sorry about that. That's your loss. But you're about to find out who he really is. Machinist, podcast host, FJ specialist. Like, he's got it all covered. Would that be a fair assumption?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
And Dennis, you're in Quebec now. Is that right?
Currently in Quebec. We've moved quite a bit the past few years, so we span almost from coast to coast of Canada the last few years. So,
and where are you originally from?
The east coast of New Brunswick, basically, right on the border with Nova Scotia, almost. So
it's got quite a pretty place, isn't it? Like, I've never been to Canada. I'm just imagining it's just a giant New Zealand.
It's probably a giant New Zealand with just a bunch of snow in it, probably.
Yeah, for like 6 months of the year.
Some moose.
Yeah, hockey, moose, beavers.
Strange ooh. Brew.
The bats.
Bat
Pilsner.
Hey, Hoser.
What? They have bats in Nova Scotia.
Love bats.
Ah, sorry. Okay. I just suddenly was thinking, really? They have bats? That's crazy. Okay, now I got it.
You thought Boomer was speaking in his French accent. Le bats.
Yeah.
Le bats.
And Dennis, can you Molson. Speak French?
Can I speak French? Yes, I can speak French, yes.
Well, let's hear something.
Okay. Aren't you supposed to say oui?
Oui?
We? We speak French.
Yes, if you can speak French, should you say oui?
Bonjour. Just oui or weed? Is that what you said?
No, oui. Oui. I gotta take a wee.
You gotta go take a piss.
Oh, this is confusing now. Hey, there's a Canada and United States. Like, you have like a friendly banter that often happens, right?
Yeah, there's often friendly banter is the correct word. Sometimes it kind of get heated between the two countries, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. I'd say that is a little bit unfortunate because you're neighbors and you've got to look out for each other.
What was the whole, there's not that long ago, the whole aluminum thing going on because, like, we produce quite a bit of aluminum and the States wanted some of our aluminum or something. I can't really remember, but that kind of went bad pretty quick and stuff like that, I guess.
Well, you don't just sell it to them? Or how's it go bad?
Well, wouldn't Trump and like that.
Trudeau get into a pissing contest?
Yeah. I can't remember when it was, like, a couple of years ago or last year or something like that. But I think still Canada is, like, the biggest supplier or producer of aluminum. So a bunch of tariffs or whatever it was. So.
Well, I hear that we're getting ready to open a couple other places to make aluminum ourselves. Because, well, matter of fact, I have a friend that's in the beer industry and for over 35 years. And Coors Light's having a hard time coming up with aluminum for beer cans. And that's bad news. So, yeah, there's definitely a shortage here right now for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we're full force, especially I think if I'm not mistaken, Alcan is actually based or used to be based out of Quebec, which was the biggest aluminum supplier, I think, in the world. So, yeah, like we got it. I guess apparently everybody wants it.
Have you guys kind of noticed that across the board, though, with like shortages on things? Raw materials, tools, etc.
I guess we haven't seen it, or I haven't seen it too much shop-wise or whatever. Strangely, again, like stuff has been going up, even though a lot of it's produced here. Again, like even just lumber itself, like sheeted plywood doubled in price. And like, Christ, like Canada's just one big forest. So like, why is it doubled in price? So
yeah, we're triple right here right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, like $65 a sheet.
Whoa. Wow, that's expensive.
No, I've just... Go ahead, man.
From what I heard is it had a lot to do with the pandemic because when they made everybody stay at home, people started self-improving their houses. They started doing their decks. They started doing their cable rail. They just invested in remodeled and all types of shit. And that's one of the first places that we went when the pandemic very started. And for some reason, Home Depot was deemed essential because of the stuff that they had. And we would go there and they would only allow so many people in the store at a time. You had to wait outside till the like 10 people left and it looked like 5 people in. But it started early and then shit just started getting wiped off the shelves. You know, it was TP, paper towels, and then plywood and screws. And it's crazy how it affects and had affected us all. But things that you'd never thought in a million years would go up or be missing or you couldn't find, it happened.
Mm.
Yeah, true. Yeah, no, I was kind of talking about like we've had a lot of problems lately getting material, getting cutting tools. Like nobody has anything in stock. Like anytime we've been getting stuff quoted, it's, you know, like multiple weeks out because they're out of it. And it's kind of like it seems like it's across the board with almost everything lately.
Mm.
You care to drop a few names? Like, what brands are you talking about?
Oh, I don't. Well, I mean, like, as far as material goes, you know, the standards we have out here, EMJ, rolled alloys. I don't know who else they use, but we've just been having a hell of a time tracking material down. And I don't know if it's because we deal with, you know, a lot of exotics and things, and we have to have, you know, all the right certs on stuff, but it's just been like a hassle to get anything. And then I was trying to get some Micro 100 boring bars. I was trying to get some SCT boring bars.
Yeah.
And just like nobody had anything in stock.
Wow. They're pretty big players, common stuff all the time. Wow. That's unusual.
Yeah. And I was just ordering, you know, like stuff, you know, it says in the, I don't know. I prefer the printed catalog versus the website, but the printed catalog, you know, has the little symbol next to it that it's always in stock. And then, you know, you get quoted like a 4-week lead time. It's kind of a kick in the nuts.
Mm. Yeah, things have definitely kind of ramped up. It's hard to see when you're stuck in this little small town in your shop, but what's really going on out there across the states. But from what I'm hearing, man, there's people are freaking way busy and people are dropping names like, do you have capacity? Do you have capacity? And it's like shit that I never thought I'd see happen this year, but it's... it's crazy. I mean, people obviously are cranking shit out and looking for help.
Yeah. Hey, Dennis, what's the sort of work market like in your area?
So I just moved to basically our nation's capital, Ottawa, I don't know, about a month and a half ago.
And I originally thought, being Ottawa, it was going to be full of like white collar, not a lot of machining going on. And I was actually kind of worried at first because we were relocated here because of my wife's job. So originally I was kind of hemming and hawing what I was going to do, whatever. And then like I started looking on the local spot, see what was up and who was hiring and whatever. And like, I did notice there's a few places hiring and all this. And like, I started a shop just about a month ago now. It's super busy, and like, it seems to be, there's like a lot of small shops. There's a few aerospace and stuff like that, but most of it's like, you know, less than a handful of employees working in like this, you know, less than 2,000 square feet shop. And it just seems like a lot of prototyping, whatever. So like, I was actually quite surprised what's going on. And then I moved into like really the middle of buttfuck nowheres, and like I brought my shop with me. Like, so like I shipped my shop from like Edmonton to Ottawa, which is about 3,200 kilometers or about 2,000 miles. And when I showed up, and everybody was like, oh good, like there's another shop in town. I was like, oh geez, like I'm not set up yet. But like, and like, because there, it's filled with like wood mills and paper mills and logging trucks, and like apparently they've been crying for like other people. And like, I just learned like a couple days ago that the other shop in town, the owner is terminally ill, so like now they're going to be even more hurting for shops in town, even though it's like less than 5,000 people, small town. But there seems to be enough work to actually support probably at least two or three shops. But yeah, nobody wants to live up here, so.
You made some purchases in the last year. What kind of machines you got now?
I guess my Haas, my VF2, I guess I it just came up to a year of having it. And then stupid of me buying the Akuma right before we moved. So I bought it in November, last November. And then we kind of got the orders to move in December. And after the home renovations, just to kind of get it to sell, and then the moving. And so like everything's in the new shop, but like everything's just on stands and just waiting to be kind of finalized, put in its place. It's a bit of an odd situation I got going on with the old owners of the house. So like, they still have access to the shop till like June. So like, I had to keep all my equipment in the center of the shop, and he still had, because he runs a construction company. So he still has quite a bit of stuff in there too. So I got like my big DSG lathe and my small knee mill just in like in the center, and off to the side the Akuma and the Haas. So it's a bit of a clusterfuck right now, but hopefully in a few months everything's kind of settled.
Pitching, man. Sounds like you got a pretty good setup, pretty wide capabilities.
It's actually, yeah, like it's pretty good. Like I originally thought like the DSG was too big, just because it's, I can't remember if it was 80 or just a little over 80 inches between center and 24 inches of swing. And, you know, just for a small shop, I guess I didn't really think I needed, but now that I kind of look back as well, it's probably a good buy, especially if there's going to be lots of logging or wood mill work or whatever. So maybe some shafts or some cylinders coming my way, I guess. So
I feel like sometimes when you have bigger equipment, like work kind of finds you, like you don't even really got to go looking for it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm, I guess I never really, I didn't buy it thinking of that. I just, it was a super good deal at the time. And then now I'm thinking, it's like, yeah, no, this was a good buy. And like, everybody used to say Dean Smith and Grace lathes were like the Cadillac lathes. I don't know. I really like mine. So, like I said, I haven't even really touched the Akuma. And like, I was fortunate enough for that. Tony gave me a lot of books. But I kind of feel bad because I haven't really looked at it. But like, we've been so busy with the move and renovations and stuff like that in the past, what feels like 6 months now. Like, it's been crazy 6 months.
You know, I gotta say, you talk about maybe that lathe was too big, but man, I can't tell you how many times I've had to turn work away because one, either I can't pull it through the spindle because the tube's too small, or I didn't have the swing on something like that. So even though it's big, you can still do small stuff, but when it's small and it's too big, you can't do big stuff. So I'd rather be on your side of the fence than have a lathe that's too small and can't do big stuff.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Like, it's but I almost feel bad. Like, the past, whatever it is, 2 years of owning that lathe, I've just, everything that I've made on it is probably 6 inches and less of length or something. So like it's, you almost don't even use like the last half of the lathe. And not that it's a big deal or nothing, but eventually it will be used. So
that's, yeah, you'll be ready when it comes.
Yeah. So I've always been a big believer of always be ready. And if you don't want to be busy and don't have the equipment, then not be busy and have the equipment. Then when the rush does come, then you're not rushing trying to find equipment and get it hauled in, leveled, whatever, and geared up. So I'm at that stage. I just got to wait for the work to arrive, which sounds like it's coming, especially where I work now. Once my shop is settled, I'll be machining out of my shop from the guy I'm working for now.
That's pretty cool. So what's let's reverse a little wee bit now. So I mean, where did you start? Like, when did you get into machining? Have you done it from like day one, or were you like a late bloomer? What's the story?
For late bloomer. Boomer is the correct term or not, but like I started right after high school, and like I guess a lot of people kind of start a little before or know somebody that's in the trade. Like I had no clue what machining was in high school. I just seen parts being made, and at that time I was like, and still am like, in that time I was like pretty heavy into hot rods and like old cars. And you know, at that time I had like my 51 Chevy and whatever, and I was, you know, all I could think of was like getting that car on the road, making some cool part for it. And then I realized like, oh fuck, like the people making these parts are machinists. I want to be machinists. So that's where it kind of all stemmed from.
And then did you then go and do an apprenticeship, or did you just get a job and sort of learn as you went?
I kind of did a little ass backwards that I did go, so like back in New Brunswick, we had the opportunity to do a 2-year course, well, 2 1-year courses, but like, so the first year is manual and the second year is CNC. So I figured, well, I'll get my degree in both just to kind of the CNC as a fallback, which it did come in handy quite a few times getting jobs when starting out. And then I just didn't really follow an apprenticeship. I just started working, and stupid enough, I bought a house when I was pretty young and couldn't afford to go to school. So I just would work. And then eventually I just had enough hours. I don't know if that's how the same way it works in the States or in New Zealand, but just work till you have your 10,000 hours, then go. I just went and challenged it, passed it, got my red seal or license, whatever it is in your guys' area. But so yeah, that's basically how I did it. I don't know if I would recommend it for everybody, but I guess it could work for some. But
and then did you manage to get all the parts made for your car, or is it still a project ongoing?
No, I did do a few parts for it, and like probably not enough, because like when you're young and you're not wise enough and you see a good deal on cars, next thing you know, you got like 7 cars and you figure out you don't have time for one of them. And that's kind of what happened to me. And then when the 51 Chev was on the road, and just kind of put it aside and started on a Model T, Ford Model T, and then started on that and bought like a 51 Mercury pickup. And then, you know, then next thing you know, you got like a bunch of projects and none of them are done. So I just find it's something you got when you get older, you realize actually you don't really need fucking 5 cars, you asshole. Like you just buy one and put it on the road and enjoy it. And so yeah.
Which one did you pick?
What?
Which one did you pick?
Unfortunately, none, because every time we move, I had to sell everything. So when we moved from New Brunswick to Alberta, I had, like I said, I had the 51 Chevy, the Model T, the Mercury pickup. The wife had like a Model A. I think it was like a 60 or 62 Beetle, and like we just like, okay, we moving? Yeah, okay, well, we'll just fucking sell everything. And then when we got to Alberta, then fucking, all right, same thing. I have something, for some reason, I have a factuation for like 49 to 54 Chevs. So found a 49, bought that, bought, my wife bought another Beetle, and yeah, same thing. You know, 2.5 years later, are we moving again? All right, we'll sell everything again. So, well, yeah.
Why do you keep moving? Is it all just your wife's job, or is it just because there's then suddenly no work, or what's the deal?
No, actually, strangely enough, like in Alberta, so like I work in Fort McMurray, which is like northern Alberta. Boomer knows where that is. No, there's actually quite a bit of work, but like my wife, she's almost so she's like a welding, like a level 2 welding inspector, and she works for a company that all they do is like big jobs. And so like when we move to a new location, she gets onto a project, and once the project is over, it's either find a new job with a different company or they will relocate us. So like when they relocate us, they pay for everything. So wow. Like it's an opportunity to kind of see the country and basically get your shit moved for free. So that's what we kind of chose this time. So like the first time, she hadn't been working for the company long enough, so they only kind of pay for the U-Haul and whatever to move. But this time here, like we didn't have to lift a finger. Like they came into our house, they packed all our shit, and they moved everything. The only thing they wouldn't pay for was the moving of the equipment. But then we kind of worked it out. They paid for the logistics of moving the equipment, but not like the forklift. So like I still had to rent forklifts and move the equipment myself. But other than that, that's in reality, that's kind of the cheaper probably part of it, of moving equipment. So
when you say they came into your house and packed everything and you didn't have to lift a finger, did they even like fold your boxers and put them in the box?
Absolutely. They even, strangely enough, they even packed full garbages, which
we
didn't know this, and we only found this out when we moved and unpacked.
Well, they took the garbage with
them. They took the garbage to the other side of the country.
Yeah.
These guys took the work order a little too seriously.
No.
And the cat box even had turds in it still.
Yeah, like I was pretty, like we were just surprised and shocked. It's like we were just opening up boxes like, oh, look, a little garbage. And like then we open it up. It's fucking filled with garbage. Like, Jesus. But anyways, like I said, like it's not everyone's going to pay for you to move 2,000 miles or away. Right. So it's, so we kind of take the opportunity. Like we don't have kids. We don't have big families or nothing. So like it's easy for us just to like uproot and leave and go somewhere else, new experiences.
Right.
So no, it's, like I said, it's always an adventure. So we'll always see what, different areas brings up. So,
did you actually get to make a part on that Akuma yet, or just not quite there yet?
Not even there yet. It's like I said, we bought it in, I can't remember if it was the start of November or mid November. Mm-hmm. And then like December, early or mid December, we got like the order to like relocate. And like at that time I was doing shift work. So I was doing 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. And then it just kind of happened where like, I just got off a shift and then like, oh, they want us to move. All right. And then we just started doing the renos and putting the house for sale and stuff like that. And, you know, getting all the equipment, take all the wires off the panels off the walls. Like I took everything. I run everything off two phase converters because, the manual stuff is all on 600 volts and the CNCs are all on 220. So, but yeah, now it's been crazy lately. So,
hello.
I was waiting for that. I was like, who's gonna break first? Who's gonna break first?
That would have been the perfect time for me to go grab another beer.
Could have been.
Well, obviously, the key for that is when you mute your mic. We all know it's code. You're gonna go grab another beer. Come on, son.
Oh, I always click the button on my mic. I don't click the one on the screen.
Well, I can't see the button on your mic from my house, bitch.
Okay, well, can you see this, motherfucker?
Are you flipping me off? You are flipping me off. Oh, I see it now. I can see you now.
I think you pulled the butt plug out.
Come take it away from him.
It's so still
a good,
in.
That's a good segue into... It's a good segue into... Now, Dennis, you also had specialized in not making butt plugs, but making gear knobs.
Kind of in the same family.
It's sort of the same, you know? Like it's sort of the same shape. One person might use one for the other. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true, yes.
I think there's a video of that somewhere.
No, but you've had some good recognition for your work making those gear shifters, right?
Yeah, it's just kind of I hate the word passion project, but like it's just something I do for fun, and I don't even charge for them. I just kind of charge for materials, but it's kind of like a very, not selective, but like it's kind of like a selective program. Like if I don't, like I said, because I don't charge and whatever, I just if I don't like the car, if I don't like the person, I don't make it. It's simple as that.
Obviously, if you have one of his shift handles, he fucking took you a long time.
So how does that work if somebody turns up and you go, man, this person is such a nice person, but man, I fucking hate their car. You just go, I'm not going to make a gear stick for you.
Actually, no, because I just got, there's a guy that reached out today, and it's kind of that situation where like the car was kind of, it's a nice car, but it's a little bit on the boring side. And I was like,
what is it, like a Toyota Camry or something like that? Like, what is it?
It was just like a newish Volkswagen GTI. So I was like, I just finished like making some for like a 964 Porsche. And like, I got some that I got to make for like some pretty interesting cars. Once I get the shop up and running, but like this guy is like, I kind of told him my spiel about like, these are like hand built one offs, I get the customers like hand size and measure the dash, look at the what's inside the car, match it with certain elements of the car and whatever, and he kind of sent me a picture of his car. I was like, oh man, it's kind of a boring car. But then he's not to be mean or nothing, but like it's just like, because you can't, I don't know, maybe you guys ran into this before, like a shifter, you can go buy a shifter or shift knob for like, yeah, let's say 100 to 200 bucks or whatever, like, but the thing is like these shift knobs take like well over 10 hours each to make, so like you can't charge shop rate hourly for 10 hours, because then it's like $1,000 knob, and then nobody buys it. Then every time somebody asks, you just, it's always the same song and dance. So like eventually I just stopped charging and just whatever. So, but this guy had like a pretty good story about the car, one element of the car. So like he was super a nice guy and whatever. And he understood that like I probably wasn't going to make him one. Then he told me the story about how the steering wheel that's in the car has been passed down from his father or it's been in the family for generations and whatever. So I was like, well, you know, this is a good story. So I decided to make it all. I put him on the list of one of the people I got to make one for. But yeah, I know it's exactly what you were saying. Like, shit car, but like super nice guy. So,
well, two things here. So, one, if you ever get that Akuma run, and I guarantee you, your shift knob won't fucking take 10 hours to make.
No, and that's absolutely true.
And secondly, yeah, you never know what's going to happen. If you make this for that guy and his mouth speaks to several other people, it could open up a whole shit ton of work, or it could not. But I mean you got to go with how you feel and what your gut reaction is. If his car's stupid, it's stupid. But if not, I mean, given the benefit of the doubt, you never know where it's going to lead. In my opinion, that's kind of the philosophy I take. I have a lot of people come in, and a lot of people call, and had a kid call about his dirt bike today, and I just like, look, I really don't have time, but I gave him a number, sent him on his way. So I always try to end it on a positive note and wish him luck, give him a place else to go, and they seem happy when I give him another phone number. But it's the people that walk in, you know. I mean, a ramble here, but I fucking fixed lawnmowers, I fixed desk lamps, I fucking fixed multiple roller skates, I've done all types of stupid shit, and I'm kind of like you on that too. I don't charge, or if I say, hey, you know, leave a six pack by the door sometime, or if you have wine or whatever, it is what it is. But I just always, I don't know, I'm probably a sap, but I always like to try and help people out and at least give them the benefit of the doubt. But when you're busy, you're busy, and if you don't feel it, you don't feel it. So I guess ultimately you make the call with what you want to do. But anyway, that's my spiel.
But like, I've been there. I've fixed my fair share of lawnmower decks, and I've taken, you know, beer bottles as payment before and stuff like that. But like, what?
I hope they were full, not just empty beer bottles.
No, yeah, they're full. And,
okay, good.
Well, if they were empty, the packers would have put them back in a box and took them to the other side of the country.
But like, you know, it's just that these, yeah, you're right. Like, once I get the Akuma up and running again, and at least like, because they're half aluminum or half titanium, and then the other half usually wood or some type of composite, the aluminum part takes, even though I do them manually right now, it still doesn't take very long just because I have a pretty good setup. It might take less than an hour or whatever, because it's almost like two halves. There's like an insert that goes into the wood and then the base. It's the wood that takes a long time just to kind of get it a nice finish. And 99% of the time it's either laminate wood, and some woods are pretty rare and then a little more difficult to work with or whatever, and then there's a bunch of lacquer that goes on to it, and it's then the gluing of the laminate or whatever. And it was almost like, not to try to keep it exclusive, but like, then the people that would have the knobs, I almost use them more as a way to get like connections. So like, most people that I made them for that haven't charged for them or whatever, it's now people that I talk to daily or whatever, and then they own companies or they own this or that, or they know people or whatever. So it's almost like my way of getting into certain groups or whatever, or certain connections. And then then, you know, some of these cars are like well into the hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of car, and you know, they're rocking one of my knobs. So like, it's to me, it feels good for me to kind of have that exclusivity associated with my name. And then,
right.
So that's basically why I kind of do it. And again, like, I don't feel well or right charging somebody 10 hours of like labor and material for what is just a shift knob. And, you know, like, even though it'd be like a nice one, but you can't charge, you know, $500 or $1,000 for a knob, because nobody ain't going to buy it.
True. But I get what you're saying. That's pretty cool. And I do understand about, it's like you're doing it without charging them and kind of getting in the club or whatever you want to say. But so you mean to tell me you turn wood in your lathe?
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, I turn dead tree carcasses in my lathe.
Well, isn't that very messy? I mean, how do you deal with all those chips and stuff?
It's vacuum. But like, some of this wood, you don't necessarily realize it, but like, some of these woods are actually super toxic. And that's kind of bitten me in the ass once before. And I just take every precaution. You know, face mask, not just because it's COVID, but a face mask. And
what did you get? Did you get like Legionnaire's disease or something?
No, but
toxic shock syndrome.
I don't know what that is, but it sounds about right though, because like,
Google it.
Yeah,
constantly touching knobs would do that.
Yeah. But like, purple hardwood is a fairly common wood I use, and like, I didn't realize it, and I was sanding it one day, and the next day I woke up puking, and probably puked about a dozen times that day. And
really? What's wrong with it?
It's, I don't know. There's, it's some, I don't know what's in it. It's, I think it's like a
wood.
Motherfucker, I don't know if you guys follow me or not. on Instagram. Do you, Jody?
No. Tell me more.
Well, I think Shane might have seen me, but I fucking turned Purple Heart handles on my Akumi. Remember that? Purple Heart.
I love Purple Heart, man. The wood is beautiful.
You turned a lot of wood.
I did.
Dennis, do you reckon it's actually the wood, though? Do you reckon maybe it's just something else, like the fact that you're fucking drinking rum and orange? That could be probably.
No, like it's the only thing I could figure out. And I don't know if it's Tony, if it's because you're running inside. Are you running it enclosed?
I have the door open and I don't have a vacuum going either because I can't hear my classical jazz music playing with the vacuum going. So I just let this shit fly all over the place. But yeah, I mean, I turned a shit ton of Purple Heart. I turned Babinga. I turned all kinds of stuff. But man,
I don't know.
Man, I'm going to have a talk with it. My supplier, because you know I'm gonna get Hank's gonna need hazardous duty pay if he makes more of that shit.
Like I was hand sanding it, and I was like really in, like my face pretty close up to it, right. Like super fine particles, and I can't remember who it was. There was a guy on Instagram that messaged me. He says, "Oh, like the next day was like, oh, you know that's pretty toxic stuff." I was like, "Yeah, I puke like 6 times at this point."
Whoa.
So. Whoa. And if you read up on Purple Heart, it says it's pretty toxic. Well, it's not toxic. Well, no, it is toxic. It's just not like it won't kill you or nothing. But it's fairly toxic. So
how close did you have your face to it? Like,
well, you know, within a foot or something. But like spinning at fairly high RPMs with fine sandpapers, I guess.
And, dust, yeah, dust is dust. That's airborne, and boom. That's
true. Yeah. Hey, I want to pick up on something you said that, so when you're making the custom gear shifter knobs, you said you also measure the people's hands.
Yeah.
Like, so someone comes in, they're a nice person, big tick. They've got a cool car, big tick. And then, like, what if they've got like a fucking hand, like a bunch of bananas, like a massive hand?
Hold on. Let me pull my pants down.
What if their hand is so big that the gear shifter knob looks like a big clown ball, you know, like it's just like an orange or a melon? Like, what if it's so big that it's ridiculous?
It doesn't go bigger round, it goes longer, Holmes. Come on.
Longer? Why would it go longer?
Because if you hold something in your hand, it's your hand is, you know, like the size of the banana that you're holding on to. You wouldn't like. It doesn't mean you're going to arch around a circumference. You're going to go for a length, or maybe hell, I don't know. I'm not a knob maker. Am I wrong? Am I right?
I don't know. I just
I'm not sure.
I haven't ran into that situation yet. I just usually ask for like glove size.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Because I then was thinking, well, at the other end of the spectrum, you have like a midget hand, like a dwarf, like mega small hand.
Oh, like Deadpool. It's the size of a
yeah, yeah. When he's got like a tiny baby hand, and then suddenly you've got like a gear stick that the knob is tiny on it.
You're getting all tongue twisted there, buddy. You've got a Deadpool, tiny hands, Crocs, masturbating shoes. Deadpool's so big right now.
Well, my dick's really small on one hand, but on the other hand, it's massive.
Whoa.
Okay, sorry, took that too far. Okay, so you don't actually measure the inside of their palm. You just say, hey, what size glove are you? And they'll go, oh, I'm an extra large. And you go, okay, cool, I'm gonna make a inch and a half ball or something.
You think?
Yeah, so I've yeah, no, I've been doing it long enough now that like I know like a 2-inch round knob is you got
to get stuck.
Yeah.
Well. And this is why Jody only did the tip.
It could get stuck. You're right.
This must definitely be a Canadian thing because I couldn't tell you my glove size for the life of me.
Really?
When I don't was even, the last time you had a pair of gloves?
I don't even think I own a pair of gloves. Yeah, to be honest.
Problem. Oh well, you don't get snow, you don't get cold, you don't wear.
I mean, maybe like I have a pair of like Fox motocross gloves or something laying around, but that's.
Oh, Boomer, you don't wear rubber gloves at the shop at all?
No.
Oh well, if you wear nitrile, you could either have large or extra large, but
no, I don't. Large wear will,
okay, large fits tight, extra large is kind of loose, but yeah, it is what it
is. I go raw, son.
Whoa!
Don't you have like a special glove for when Jackie's away?
Deep skin.
It's mink, but
Yeah, maybe.
Wow.
Rosie Palmer sisters.
Righto, we're going to do Stop the Podcast.
Oh, Boomer, do it.
Oh, yeah,
Boomer's into it. Is this the new thing now where I do it and you guys just make fun of me?
No, I wish you had a Casio going on because that would be fucking clever.
I'm looking at it right now. I mean,
oh, it's there?
I can dial things up if you want. I got a guitar here. I got a ukulele. I got a Casio.
Oh, ukulele. Do ukulele.
Oh, hang on.
Oh, don't come in hot, low. You've got a fucking ukulele and you're standing there with your balls out because you're having a piss. Just get onto the ukulele and start playing.
Don't get your balls tangled up in the strings. Yes. Yeah, we'll stop the podcast from Hawaii, it sounds like.
Yeah, let's do that. Ready? Here we go. Maybe as you do it, Boomer, we'll do a sing-along and then you can carry on.
Aloha.
Stop the podcast.
The podcast. Come on, you know you wanna lay me.
They all have your balls out and a piss.
Let's eat some pig. That was beautiful.
Hey, Dennis.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you and, I mean, not your house address, obviously, but on Instagram or on a website or wherever. And, yeah.
I just really do Instagram nowadays, so it's just FF Metalworks. That's pretty simple.
All one word?
All one word.
Wow. FF Metalworks. Nice. When you try to say it as one word, it doesn't work, does it? If you go FF Metalworks... You know, it's not quite, it doesn't have quite the same ring to it. If you went FF Metalworks, like you go true. F, Metalworks.
That's a lot of commas. Fuck hey, you. Dennis, if I wanted you to make me a shifter, would I send you my glove size or my shoe size?
Well, you can send me your boxer size.
Yes.
Isn't that an aerobic?
2X, baby.
You don't need 2X, Boomer, when you've got your junk out and your balls out on the piss.
There comes the ukulele again. I love it.
Let's get on
with the podcast.
Fuck, we were harmonizing there, man. That's not it.
Felt like there was such a beautiful connection between all of us.
Barbershop quartet.
So Dennis, your knobs that you've made, they've been published in magazines as well, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a boutique magazine. It was called Revival Motoring. They've been in ads for like Rotiform and other wheel manufacturers and stuff like that, and you know, and like the cover car and stuff like that. I ship shift knobs from the UK to California, and, you know, everywhere's in between. So, yeah.
As Tony said, you know, when you get something, you know, not turning too many people away, but doing something that's like, you know, you're doing it because you enjoy doing it, which is always a great reason to do something. And then from that, you're getting these contacts, which are going to help you further down the track, which is cool.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's pretty, I don't know. It's kind of like it's almost partly like a business card / an actual knob, I guess. And like you, right? You create these friendships or almost like business communications or business friendships or whatever. So it's, like I said, even though it's free, it does kind of pay off eventually, or if not monetary, then you can kind of have connections. If you travel, like maybe not during COVID and all this stuff, but like if I would travel to California or the UK or Ireland, or right, like I know somebody there, I've built a relationship or a friendship with people out there. And so it, you can go see their shops. They're doing some amazing stuff, all these people. So it'd be cool to just go see their shop, see what they're doing and all this. So yeah.
Now, I got a question. I'm pretty sure it was you, or maybe it was a dream, but have you made a steering wheel?
Yeah, I did make a steering wheel. I just haven't finished it. It should have been done probably a long time ago. Again, don't want to blame it on the move and whatever, but like the move happened, that really set me back. But last time I made the wooden rim for it, and then I think I waited a couple of days too late, and the wood it just turned cold, and I had the heat cranked up in the shop, and I was running gas heat, so it was pretty dry heat or whatever, and just it shrank the wood, and when I went to put it on, cracked the wood, and then
when you put
I can't remember how many hours I have in that thing, but when something like that happens, you're just like, you almost don't even want to look at it for a while. Right.
Now, I mean, I must know that because you must have sent me a picture or transcendental meditated into my brain or something. But
whoa.
Is that something that if you get that dialed in, that might be your next signature item, is steering wheels for super hot rods or cool cars? Or I like you a lot. Here's a steering wheel.
Yeah, well, that was kind of the whole purpose of that too. Like, that was actually basically one of these like really good friendships people that I now have a connection or whatever. So like, that steering wheel was made for Brian Scotto. I don't know if you guys know what Hooniganer is or not, but so like, he's co-creator of Hoonigan. So like,
yeah,
it's for one of his cars, and I still have it, and I still. Once the shop is up and running, it'll be like one of the first things I'll do and finish it and send it to him. But same thing. It was kind of one of those ideas like, fuck, I just bought the CNC. What the fuck am I going to make with it? And again, being like a super big car guy, I was like, well, like a steering wheel would be cool. And like, yeah, there is some companies out there making steering wheels for hot rods. And but like, nobody's making recreation wheels for like German cars, which is like another thing I like. So like, I was like, well, and there were some pretty cool steering wheels over the years out of German cars. So I was like, oh, like, so I found like a Mark 1, Mark 2 GTI steering wheel, and a good friend of mine helped me, you know, put it through Fusion and model it, and I put the tool pads and whatever. So like, it's so it was kind of like my intro into Fusion. I couldn't have done it without Dale's help. I don't know if I can mention his shop name or not.
We don't care.
Yeah, we don't give a shit.
We don't care about anything. Just keep going.
So like, Dale over at Widget Works in Alberta, Edmonton, like, he's a master whiz at like Fusion and machining and CNC machining in general. So like, he helped me quite a bit, you know, just getting the model out, and anytime I had questions, because again, like, I spent, you know, the past 12 years, like, I only did a couple years of CNC right out of college, and like, you know, 10-12 years of like straight manual. So like, I was trying to get back into CNC. Nobody wanted to give me a chance, so that's why I bought a machine, so I can like try and teach myself, which is like a super big expense.
Yeah, but no, that was super impressive, man, because like, just knowing you from Instagram and from your podcast and everything, you know, it's kind of like, okay, he's a manual guy, you know, just kind of a, you know, just get it done at all costs, repair work, this, that, whatever. And then you bought a CNC, and it's like, oh, damn, here he goes. And then, you know, I was kind of wondering, like, oh, what's he going to make? What's he going to make first? And then it's like, well, here he goes with a fucking steering wheel. Like,
a little ambitious, I think. But
well, I mean, there's a lot of, like, adaptive roughing in there. There's some surfacing. Like, that was pretty cool. It was like, damn, he's really going for it.
Well, yeah, it's like I was saying, like, nobody wanted to give me a chance. Trying to get back into, right, because CNC is, unless you're doing repair work, like CNC is like, I guess generations have been saying this, but CNC is the future. And like, I just wanted to kind of get back into it. So that's why I bought the VF2. And then, again, nobody wanted to give me a chance on a CNC lathe. So I was like, well, fuck it. That Kuma Cadet came out for pretty cheap. One owner since like 91, and they ran a part in front of me. I was like, well, it seems all right. They took really good care of it. So I bought that kind of on a whim, and I was hoping to, you know, do some work with it. And that's why, like, I reached out to Tony about, because I know he ran basically all Akumas, and he's like the Akuma King. So he was starting to help me, and then the whole move happened, and it all kind of fell into the water. So hopefully in a few months I'll get it all hooked up again.
Well, when you get ready again, man, don't hesitate to shout out at me and I'll hook you up. But that you can't go wrong with the Kuma Cadet. They're solid on a solid base. Just, you know, they do what you ask, and it's a good machine to learn on. And I was going to go back to what you were saying about making parts for like recreation of stuff like the German cars or whatever it was. So I had a guy as a customer of mine that makes some parts for him, or basic parts, but he's a big motorcycle rebuild kind of guy. He does BMWs and Indians and shit like that. And so he hit me up and said, hey, look, I got a gal down in Sonoma County that's rebuilding a 19, I don't know what, Indian motorcycle, and she can't find the tank emblems that are supposed to go on the outside, but we have pictures of them. So is there a way that I could send you a picture and you can scan it and then put it into your CAD CAM system and then make a program and recreate it and charge you whatever it may cost? And I said, no. He's all, do you know anybody that's smart enough to do that? I go, no. I totally understand what you're saying, and there are people out there that are smart enough that know how to do that, but I'm not in that circle, dude.
Yeah. Like, I'm not there yet. I just kind of restarted on Fusion, I don't know, a month ago, and same thing, just like slow learning. I reach out to, you know, a couple of people about what to do, this and that. And now it's like, it's starting to come back. Like, you know what I mean? When I was taking CNC in college was like, you know, 13, 14 years ago. Like, at that time it was Master Cam. I don't even remember what number.
Right.
And like I said, I haven't touched CNC in like 10, 12 years. Like, obviously all that's gone. So like, it's just like start, and it's so frustrating because I remember back in the day, I could walk up to a machine, fucking beep, 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 fucking touch these buttons, whatever, and make it go. And now I'm just like, I feel like a dumbass. I can barely do nothing. But now it's kind of coming back, and now I'm setting up the machine at work, and, you know, machining turbos and like upgrading turbos and all this. And so like, it's, and I'm the only one there. There's no other machinist there. So like everything, I've been kind of putting a big push on myself just to kind of relearn a bunch of stuff. And it's been going pretty good. So knock on wood, but.
Well, that's a good thing. You know, one of the things that it kind of was an eye opener for me, because I mean, I'm mostly a production guy, a production shop. And because I'm so limited with help, I don't really have time to do one-offs or custom shit like that. But then when you stop and take a look and a deep breath, and you got these people that are willing to pay this amount of money for some custom fucking motorcycle emblem on the side of their tank, it's like, you know, if I made two of those, if I knew how to do that and figure that out, I could probably make more on these two parts than I could like on an order for 500 or something else. It's just, it's weird, because people that have money that want to rebuild stuff and restore stuff will spend the money and they won't even look at you twice. Weird. But yet you're trying to make production and people want to freaking lean and mean. It's like, it's just, we live in a world where things are so, depends on what side of the line you're on, man. It's crazy.
It is kind of crazy, because like, I know Tony, you got a couple old cars and whatever, but like, and you've been around long enough to know, like back in the day, everybody would have paid enormous amounts for like billet. Everything was billet. It was so gaudy or whatever, but like, everybody wanted billet. But like, nowadays nobody wants to pay money for like those parts, but they want to pay billet prices for something that looks stock.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. You know, I had a material truck show up yesterday, and he dropped off some screw machine stock for me. But he saw all my neighbor guys. If you follow me long enough, you know that the guy right across the street from me on in our business complex, he does restores all the hot rods and stuff. And so he saw his Chevy wagon out there, and the truck driver's all, "So what's that guy do? Does he buy things and fix them up, sell them?" I go, "No, he does full restores." He's all, "Oh, I wonder what he would charge to do my 52 Chevy, blah, blah, blah." I go, "A lot." He's all, "What do you mean a lot?" I go, "A lot. You mean like thousands and thousands of dollars?" I go, "Yeah." He's all, "Well," I go, "Look, dude, there's people that roll cars in there that look just like that one." And he hooks up his DA with 80 grit and takes the paint right off down the middle, because he's got to get to the root, the core, find out how much Bondo's on that shit and strip it down. So, yeah, we're talking, he don't touch anything unless it's like 50, 60 grand. You know, he's got a waiting list. So anyway, he went over there and talked to him. But yeah, he was out of his league. But that, once again, there's people that are specialists like that. And, you know, it's weird because when you do good work and you do quality, no matter what you do, people are going to find you. Word of mouth, whatever it is, they come looking for you. And then, yeah, that's all I got to say about that.
Yeah, I've seen those cars in person, and they're, I mean, nicer than they ever were brand new.
Yep.
That guy does phenomenal work.
But yeah, like it's kind of one of those. I started talking to Jonathan Ward, and I don't know if, I guess maybe Shane, maybe you know Icon 4x4?
Nope.
No, anyways, like all he does is, not all he does, but like all he takes like Broncos and K5 Blazers, I believe, and like old FJ40s and basically strips them down, puts a new running gear and all this, and they basically leave as like a high hundreds to 200 some odd thousand dollar vehicle, but they look stock, right? So like
a resto just, mod.
Yeah, a resto mod is like to the umpth degree where like everything's everything's been touched, but like nothing looks out of place. It almost looks stock, but like the leather is like the best leather, and like the knobs are machined out of whatever, and like, but it all looks stock. And this is what people are paying for nowadays. They want something that doesn't look like anything has been done, but yet it's still like a $200,000 vehicle it's crazy.
We have a couple guys in town that do like 80s Toyota trucks, and they strip them down and repaint them and then build them back like completely stock. And they'll put like, you know, like a 3-4 inch lift on it, a little bit bigger tires. And they'll kind of build like the Marty McFly truck out of it. And then they'll sell them for like 30,000-35,000 bucks for an 80s Toyota truck.
Jesus. Yeah. Well, that's not bad really. Cause if you think about it, like he also does like, was it FJ80s or whatever? Like that'd be 80s, I think. Right. So, mm-hmm. You know, he still charges 100-some-odd thousand to make them, so like it's to redo them, I guess. So
yeah, they're actually starting to get hard to find out here because the Rubicon's right up the street, Ford Ice is right up the street. So over the years, they've all been cut up and modified, and you know, beat to hell, and then they end up just junking the body and keeping the running gear and finding something else and putting it all under that.
Dennis, you've got an FJ something, like
FJ Cruiser, yeah.
Right. So you're quite into that.
As of late, yes, it's a fairly new purchase. I only purchased last year, and I used to be into the lowered car scene or whatever, and then found myself putting lifts on things.
I can't imagine there's much of a lowered car scene in Alberta.
No, there was, but there wasn't much because everybody drives a lifted dually or a lifted three-quarter ton or a lifted half ton or big-ass stacks in the back. And
So you're the host of the Lave Night podcast. What's the go there? Have you just shelved it for a while, or is it something that's going to come back?
I don't know. It may come back. It's I kind of at the time I lost my co-host, I never asked him really why he decided he didn't want to do it anymore. And I respected his decision and just kind of, I didn't necessarily want to do, I really liked the having like two people in the same room and kind of feeding off each other's energy or whatever. And then when he decided he didn't want to do it anymore, and I did try it. I did do one episode after that. But it wasn't the same or whatever, so I just kind of shelved it, I guess, for now.
It's Eric. Eric Baya, wasn't it? Eric, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Eric, we've never really been
good friend.
We've never been in the same room.
We haven't. So imagine what would happen, Tony, when we're all in the same room.
We have it recorded in the same room. We've all been in the same room.
What, Boomer?
What? What are you saying?
Myself, Jody, and Tony have been in the same room together, but we have not recorded a podcast in the same room together.
Where were we, Boomer?
We were at a hotel bar in Chicago somewhere.
Oh, yes, we were. The night they were playing super loud music and we couldn't hear a fucking word that anybody was saying.
Yeah, we were screaming at each other sitting next to each other.
I remember that.
Yeah. We were down somewhere in Chicago next to the canal.
Yeah, right. Playing live music. That's right. That's right. Well, yeah. Jody usually has a question he likes to ask our guests right about now. So why don't you go ahead and ask him, Jody?
Oh, yeah. Dennis, do you have a foreskin?
Yes or no? It's pretty simple.
Yeah, of course.
Exactly. He is safe.
All right, next question, Jody. What else do you like to ask our guest?
What I like to ask is, you're quite a user of Instagram, and what accounts would you recommend that people go and have a look at?
Good question.
Well, like other than yourselves' account and MTH?
Well, okay, you can stop.
Why does everybody do that?
I don't know.
not everybody.
No. If you really like these super nice machine parts for cars, EVOD, so EVOD Industries, they make anything from steering wheels to emblems to fuck you name it for cars, right? So they make unbelievably wheels, like you name it, they make it. Unbelievable parts. I think they're in California. New Dublin shit fittings on the East Coast of Canada. He does like everything manual. It's all boat stuff. It's really nice stuff. He used to do a lot of forging and stuff like that. He hasn't done it in a while. I keep pushing him to do it, but that's always pretty cool to see and stuff like that. Man, it's kind of on the spot. I didn't really think about this question.
that's the whole point of it.
Yeah.
Well, let's not you know dwell on that too much because there's some good accounts there to look at. But what's the next step for Dennis? Are you do you think you're going to be moving again in the next 6 months, or are you going to be locked in place for a couple of years now? What's the plan?
So the project is for 4 to 5. We're going to be looking to probably move again in about 4 to 5 years. But until that comes, hopefully I get it. I do want to get my shop up and running and, you know, self-sustaining and all that, but I almost feel bad to get it to a point where people depend on me and then, you know, fail off out of this town. Yeah. Like I'm kind of torn, whatever I should do it. And then, or just like when we move again, just thing as like a house and a business attached to it. And then when we move on to the next place, that money and just like buy other equipment. I haven't thought of it too much as of now, because that's still like 4 to 5 years from now. So it is in the back of my mind.
Can we ask, I mean, what the project is that she's working on right now? I mean, you said she's a level 2. Welding inspector, and I have a little brother that's a welding inspector, and it'd be like he could be in one spot at one time. They're going to build like a new arena in Seattle, and they're building a lot of the framework or whatever it is, and then he inspects it, and they truck it up there, and they have another inspector watching what they do up there and inspecting that as they re-weld it. I mean, can we ask what she's working on right now?
So she's part of the quality assurance team for the LRT, so the light rail transport. Like a metro or whatever you want to call it. So she's on like the phase two. So like we weren't here for phase one, so we don't really know what it is. But so yeah, so she's here for phase two, and I think they're doing the north to south going across Ottawa. So
wow. So yeah, it's like it would take a while to do that.
Yeah, it's a big project.
But if you established your shop and it become super successful, like could it be that you say, well, I don't want to move again. Let's just stay here.
Yeah, well, we've had that conversation. But oh, sorry, Tony, what did you say?
I was gonna say she's gonna say not if you keep doing shit for free.
Yeah, if you take 10 hours to make a gear stick, we're fucked.
Yeah. But yeah, but what, no,
once that Akuma's fired up, you're gonna be loving it.
Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty excited to get to use it, to actually turn a part on it. And like I said, I haven't touched CNC lathe in probably 13, 14 years. So it, I'd be pretty excited to see it turn and turn apart, and hopefully everything goes well and don't crash it. But
well, and if my memory serves me correctly, that thing does have IGF on it, right? Because I sent you that manual.
Yeah, it does have IGF, yeah. I'm pretty sure it does.
That's the old schoolest, easiest CAD. I mean, Hank's a specialist with IGF / CAD CAM on that. But, I mean, when I first stumbled into that, it was so simplified that it even does – it's a calculator as you're typing into it. You know, you type in one or another and plus or minus, and it does the math for you. But it's a lot like what Boomer was used to with Mesotrol. I mean, it's been around since the 80s, but yeah. It's conversational, and it's like – you know, you don't have to use it if you don't want to, but man, you draw your blank and then you say, hey, I want to rough OD this, and you define the whole outer shape, and they're like, hey, well, now I want to finish it. So you could copy your path and then mend it and start at X0Z0 and then just bow and thread and wide groove with chamfers, radiuses, whatever the fuck you want to do, or you want to do NPT tag threads. And it's very powerful for as old as it is. I mean,
yeah, it's you just awesome. You know, I want a groove this wide, this diameter, with these radiuses at the top, these fillets in the bottom. There you go.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to spit you out CAN cycles, which is what I learned on. It's like, that's kind of what threw me and Hank for a loop when people started posting on CAD/CAM. And I had a lot of friends that, you know, would help me out. And like, they would shoot me a profile path. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Why is it starting out with 15 X's and Z's before it ever actually even touches the part? Like X1.1, X1.025, X blah, 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 the Z point blah, blah. And then it finally touches the face. I'm like, this seems like a fucking waste of everybody's time. Oh, I don't know. It's just the way the CAD/CAM spits it out. And it was like, that's kind of what, I won't say irritated me, but it was like, in a nutshell, I didn't waste any time. It was just as fast, but it just didn't look, it wasn't right to me, but I'm trying to adapt. It's hard to read. It is. It's weird.
Yeah, some spit out a whole bunch of garbage, but I think the real question here is, would Canada ever let Hank in?
We are known for being nice. We would absolutely let him in.
Oh, you wouldn't let him out.
Because once upon a time, once upon a time, I played in a band, and we had some shows lined up in Canada, and then we had two guys that could not get through, and one was because he had a, I think it's a misdemeanor mutual combat charge.
What the fuck does that him. Mean?
What is that? That sounds.
He fought Chuck Norris or John Wick.
It's when you get in a fight, and I guess the cops see it, and then both of you say, "Oh, I don't want to press charges," but they still charge you with something anyways. And then the other guy had like a DUI, and they wouldn't let either of them in.
Damn.
So really? I think Hank might be screwed on this one.
Well, like you said, if he got in, he'd never get out.
Yeah, possibly. The U.S. would kind of throw a party, maybe.
I think now that weed is legal for a few years, I think everybody's probably too stoned now to like probably even care.
Yeah.
I'm assuming nobody cares anymore. So just come right in, just like open
basically doors. You're saying Hank would fit in fine then.
What are some other podcasts you enjoy listening to besides this one, Dennis?
Yeah, good question.
The others are mostly car related, so like Revival Motoring and then Reload. So one's out of Rhode Island, I think, and the other one's out of Northern Ireland. And that's really about it. I try to not listen to too much, I guess. Like, I don't know, like takes cool. too much. I don't know, takes too much of your time, I guess. Like, it's either I'm working or driving with the wife, you know, because we travel back and forth together. So like, she doesn't necessarily want to listen to a podcast. So.
Cool. I got an off topic question. So say you were just like on a long flight and you're not one of those guys that like you got a window seat, right? So there's like two other people on the other side. You're like, I got to take a leak, but not a really bad leak. I can wait till we land. Are you with me?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah.
So the plane lands and you're getting off and you go into the bathroom and you're in the airport and you don't have a connecting flight or anything, but you come across the first bathroom and you walk into the men's room and there's this line of urinals and the first one's open. Do you go and take a leak in that urinal or do you think to yourself, so many people have stopped at this first urinal pissing. It's going to be bad, bad overspray. Maybe I should go like four urinals down. Are you like number one or are you like number four?
It's definitely off topic. I'd be right.
Because we all know that number one urinal gets used a fucking lot, right? Do you agree?
No. Because if everyone has the same logic as you, they would
never use
number one.
Nobody has the same logic as me. Nobody even thinks like
me. Maybe it's
the
one at the end that gets used the most.
Are you shy, Boomer?
Well, they walk in and like maybe someone will come up next to me and they're a violent shaker and I might have an incident.
Yeah. I've been in that situation. You're right.
Well, I think if you go clear to the end, you're probably embarrassed about the size of whatever.
Why don't you just go the other way.
The floor drain.
Just go straight. Hey,
you know what? Hold on. This question was for Dennis.
Sorry.
It's open. Speculation. Conjecture.
Go, Dennis, go.
Oh, we lost him again.
He must be thinking really, really.
Maybe he went to take a leak.
He might be like, you might be one of those guys that goes straight up to the urinal, whatever, and then actually pulls his entire pants down and stands there with his drawers on the floor and just owns it. Just like, yeah, no, you're not going to stand next to me.
Now, I actually had a conversation with somebody the other day. But do you just pull?
Good for you, Boomer.
Oh yeah. God damn it. Do you pull everything out when you go?
What do you mean everything? Well, your balls as well.
Yeah.
No, I wear boxers, so I just pull it through the hole.
Oh yeah. There's that like funny pocket.
I have to pull everything out.
There's nothing funny about it. So did I ever tell you guys the story about when I was 15 and I went to a Rick Springfield concert, which. Don't ask me any questions about that. But anyway, there was the men's bathroom and the girls' bathroom. I was like 15. I went with my mom to this concert because she was a big fan of Rick Springfield. But anyway, the women's bathroom line was fucking huge. It was around the corner and up the sidewalk. And the men's was way short. So I went in there to take a leak. And women were jumping from the women's line into the men's line. And I actually watched some of the super hottest chicks lift up their skirt, straddle a urinal, and pee right into it. And I was like, oh, my God. It was the best concert I ever went to.
I bet.
Oh, well, that and was the weirdest entry point to a conversation.
Well, was it overspray?
Yeah.
Dennis, do you pee in the first urinal or the fourth or way down at the end with Boomer?
Oh, way down with Boomer. We're probably sharing the same urinal.
Fuck, I figured that.
Yeah, right. But you look around to Boomer and he's got his fucking balls out as well because he has to get everything out.
That would be fucking weird. I'd be like, dude, why are your balls out? I mean, the pee comes out the tip, not your sack. Wow. Boomer, I'm never flying with you anywhere, okay?
But Boomer, when you do that, do you hold it as well? Do you hold your balls as well while you're having a piss?
Like, no, you sort I don't. Of just go like, I don't know. I don't know why I have to pull it all out, man.
Are you just making sure it's still there, doing inventory, or what?
Maybe I'm just, what? You know, letting them out for air or something. It gets wow. hot out here, man.
Yeah, it must do. Maybe they just, you just thought, oh, I'm going to pull them out just so they can have a view, you know, a view of the urinal, just see what's going on, check the boys out. Boom. Anyway, we may have reached the end of the podcast.
We've reached the end of something.
We have reached the end.
If this is what we're talking about, we've definitely run out of things to talk about.
Yeah, I think you might be right, Boomer.
You know what, though? A lot of people find this stuff kind of interesting, actually. It's probably a lot better than talking
and
about...
And something's fucking wrong with them, and they need to go to the talking doctor, because...
Well,
I don't
hold
know.
On, Boomer. Talking doctor. People have contacted me and said, you know, not to mention any names, Tom the Machinist, but it's like, you guys are really beating that John Wick thing into the dirt. Well, we're beating something else right now, Tom, and it's Boomer's balls and his weenus all out at the same time in the urinal, so take a look at that. How you like those apps?
To be fair, he's also
no other human being on Earth that pees like that.
I don't know. That's Tom.
I think there's more of us than you think, buddy.
Fuck. Oh, no way.
More of us? What is it, a cult? It's a fucking cult. Whip it all up.
I'm having a pee, but with my balls.
Hey, I think this will be a very good poll for.
I was going to say, Jody, next time you're supposed to be working and you're not. Do a poll and say, when you go to the bathroom, do you just take the tip out or do you take the balls out too?
Okay, that's cool.
Well, that would be way cool.
Yeah, maybe we get Hank to do that when he's supposed to be working on his Instagram.
Ooh-wee, that's a fucking good idea. He might have to do a demo video.
Oh, God.
Well, that'd be right after he does his shower beer video, of course. But that's
talk about that. How cool was that?
You know what? I was caught off guard, and so was Hank. But, yeah, that's going to be badass. And you know what? That Machine Shop Outlaw shout-out, buddy, he hooked me up with 3 of them shower beer fucking shelves, the SBS. And I'm thinking Machinist Therapy Hotline is going to have to come up with some type of giveaway because I don't have 3 showers. But
yeah, that's
what they're
for, bud.
I don't have 3 showers.
Yeah, one of them was to give away because one day they would come in.
How do you know this?
Well, he showed it to us, but it was going to be a surprise for you.
Oh, whatever.
And he was
going
to send some for a giveaway also.
Dark. Oh, man, I feel verklempt right now. I'm getting all choked. Don't understand why I left out everything.
Verklempt. That's an interesting word.
All right. All right, well, we'll give it away. Give it away.
Yeah.
Give it away.
A shower beer holder with pop top.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Done. Okay, Dennis, thank you so much for being on the Machinist Therapy Hotline.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a pleasure. I think the pleasure was all yours, I think.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've definitely reached the end of Machinist Therapy Hotline podcast with Dennis Lacouf. And I want to thank Tony Clouser.
You're welcome.
Shane Poulos.
Happy to be here.
That sounds like an
and of course our wonderful guest Dennis. And be sure to tune in next time to Machinist Therapy Hotline.
Don't miss it.